How are we going to restore 15 to 20 million jobs?
I am your future.
We have the power.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. And I'm very pleased to welcome all of you. I know that you, many thousands of people received our early email about an hour and a half ago announcing to tune in, reminding everybody to tune in. And we also get a lot of very good internet listeners as a result of people tuning in and saying these people have a lot of information to share. In fact, guys, I heard a great compliment from someone this past week, and they said, I don't understand why more issues of the type you're discussing are not in the major media. But before we get into that, I'm going to ask all of you to go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in. Then, of course, sit back, relax, and enjoy, because the entire gang is here with us. Rich Logis, Mark Andel, and Larkin Connolly. And by the way, guys, I wanted to let you know that you are appearing in the June edition of the Polish American News, and that will be online in a couple hours. Henry's going to put it up, and we'll make sure that you get it. You'll see Mark Andel and the rest of the crew in front of the Liberty Bell here in good old historic Philadelphia, and we'll keep you posted about that as time goes on. Well, gentlemen, I received a lot of great feedback from last week's program. I'd like to thank Larkin Connolly, Mark Andel, and of course, Rich Logis for placing their thoughts on the air and on the record. Now, you know, listeners, when I'm out at a lot of community events, and listeners like what they hear, and they're thinking that we're doing more to unite people than most of the other outlets that they've been hearing for a long, long time. Now, I want you to know also, ladies and gentlemen, that a lot of the press nationally took the policy to ignore groups like us and all Buy American made campaign movements. They thought that if we continued to spin our wheels, we would go away. Well, because we sort of have this daily network, we were able to build our broadcast, and we were able to then move on to the internet. And through the email systems and everything else that we do, we manage to stay on the earth. There are a few others that are out there, but not as many. They were all sort of surge groups. And once their surge and they saw that no one was out there helping them along, many of them became discouraged. But because of people like Mark and his store, the movie, people like Larkin talking about his score efforts, and Rich Logis being frank about everything, people like this. They like this format, and they see that we won't go away because we're people who really believe in our mission. And I'm really pleased to tell you that as I attended graduation get-togethers, people told me I feel no pain whatsoever to tell these people in the stores off, especially in the stores where they have all these checkout lines, where you have these automated checkout lines. People tell me they refuse to go in there. They'll wait in line for a live cashier, even though they'd be in and out if they went to the self-checkout. They won't do it, and they tell people, no, because if I go in your line, you're one person watching six cash registers, you'll be out of a job soon as people learn to use the cash registers. You won't be needed either. But I see in some of the stores that the cash register lines are still there because the people are bitching. And I even noticed in one of the stores, the checkout line for the self-checkout has been reduced to four cash registers. It had two lanes now. They took that extra lane of self-checkout and put magazines and movies and all that other stuff. So it does help to speak up. And that's the message of the day. We're not going away because of great people like Mark, Rich, and Larkin, and all of you that are going out of your way to speak up. I'm going to begin today by asking Mark, what's the latest on your end?
How you doing, Mike and crew and the listeners? We're still fired up here, Mike. As usual, we're promoting Made in America products. Just attended yesterday. Basically, it was a thank a business breakfast. But 5 years ago, April of 2010, I agreed with the county clerk at the time in Buffalo to they wanted to come out with a card to thank our veterans and give them a discount at stores. So we were the Naval Park of Buffalo was the first organization. We were the first retail business to join. And I went yesterday, and I'm proud to say there's 1,100 businesses that joined this initiative to, you know, there's basically a veterans card that you get with the county clerk, and you can take that and get discounts at businesses. But it was neat to see 1,100 people over a five-year period. It shows, again, you can make a difference and give back to, you know, those 1% that allow all our freedoms of the 300 million. So, Mike, that was a good honor yesterday. Our stores are all doing well. The Made in America movement's alive and well and really, really, really making a difference. Really neat to see. I've been thinking about that toaster, Larkin. I'm going to make it. You know, I'm going to – we joke about it, but I'm going to really seriously get into a – you know, a couple prototypes. And Larkin, get ready. Get your bread.
I can't wait.
We got to do this.
I'm going to buy a loaf.
As much as we talk about the movement and things are changing and people are all coming back and shipping's down and, you know, the labor's, you know, up in China, I'm still thinking, but we still don't have a toaster. You know, so we can never quit. We got to stay hungry and work as one team and really, really keep this alive and well. And our listeners have a lot of power with Father's Day coming up. You know, for Father's Day, go out and get these Father's Made in America products.
Well, Larkin, I want to tell you something. I had a lot of good things happen this week. And if you go on the Gallup poll, you are going to like this, Mark. You're going to like this, Larkin, and you're going to love this. Rich, the Gallup poll now states that the 48% of people having confidence in shopping at and getting products from smaller businesses located in America, if you go on the Gallup poll, it is now 67% of the American people are supporting smaller stores, smaller businesses making things because they feel it's important that we keep together in America. I was overjoyed with that particular statistic. If you go on Gallup poll, Google it, it'll come right up. It was at down to 48%. And the reason for that 20 years ago was that people saw that so many of the small businesses were collapsing because the big guys were gobbling them up. Now a lot of the small businesses are trying to revive. They're trying to make products. They're trying to feature products made by more local people. So people are having a different feeling about that. I'm really pleased to state that, and I think that's another plus for our efforts with the National Small Business Weekend, which we have to expand even more during the next year. And also, it's a great plus for the small businesses, Larkin.
That's great news, Michael. You know how I feel about big box retailers, and you know how I feel about mom and pop bricks and mortar in Anytown, USA. Speaking of Anytown, USA, I have decided to turn my call-in to the radio program into a quiz to start the program off to see if any of our fine panelists can guess based on my clues where I am right now.
Mm.
It's all I can tell you is I'm not where my wife wants me to be. So
I just looked in the parking lot here, Larkin.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea. My first clue is that the license plates in this great state have a phrase on it that says "Live free or die."
Connecticut.
Nope.
Nope, New Hampshire.
Yep. That's correct. My second clue would have been three of the leading presidential candidates were here running around the area that I'm in. I'm in Manchester this morning, Manchester, New Hampshire. I mean, I've never seen so many limousines and police and squad. It's amazing. We even have the wonderful Donald Trump up here coming up this morning to, I think, Keene, New Hampshire, but Boy, yesterday, this entire week, I've been to Concord and Manchester today, Keene and Nashville, New Hampshire. I think Mark knows New Hampshire. It is one gorgeous, gorgeous state. I mean, this is about as pretty as it gets when you talk about mountains.
Larkin, are you there hanging out with Bernie Sanders?
Bernie and I had dinner last night. No, I'm not hanging out with Bernie. Bernie left, and I think he's in Iowa on his knees. But I don't think he's in the fine state of New Hampshire. Hillary's here. Jeb is here. And the wonderful Donald. What do they call him? The Donald? The Donald is on his way up here this morning, I understand.
Wonderful. I can't wait. Now, I've been hearing that because there's so many candidates, many of them are not going to be able to be seen on the debating stage. So I'm going to see how that works out.
Yeah, that's going to be really kind of tricky.
I wonder, Larkin, if you, Rich, Mark, and some of our listeners could submit some questions that we'd like to ask these potential presidential candidates. Let's see what they would say on issues that we reflect.
Well, there's a handful of them. Most of the ones up here in New Hampshire that have a habit of not answering questions, which kind of throws me off.
You know, it's like we were talking about last week when they went to Washington and they got together and they were talking about this Trans-Pacific deal. Some of the senators said, we can't just pass this because it's become a hot issue with our constituents. We received an enormous amount of calls on our Washington telephones and in our local districts. People are concerned because they're angry that jobs have been lost and never replaced. And this here is what I think that the American people have come about, a new way of doing things. It's a new wave of change I've never seen in my life. In fact, there was an article, Larkin, you're going to like this. There was an article that appeared in the Procter & Gamble company flyer, and it says on there, Walmart investing in America's jobs. And then it shows all the things that Walmart is now focusing on in their stores. And it was a nice ad. And I see what they're trying to say in this ad. They're bringing in Charmin and Tide and Bounty and Pampers and all these other products. A lot of their other products were like second sort of, you know, where you could get it from overseas or here. The names were not exactly Bounty and Tide. They were, you know, Trend or something like that. So it is where they're going, and it has a map of the United States of America, and it's showing exactly where these various companies are. But what the bottom line is, even Walmart has to show that they are becoming American supporters, not just foreign. And as you said, something, Larkin, last week was really hit the people like a ton of bricks, and that is, we have to restore the supply chain in the USA. Without the supply chain being reversed, right now they were able to break that chain and they were able to ignore us, just like the press tried to ignore the Buy American Made movement. They tried to do that, but now they see that they can't get that. And for the record, Walmart is the largest purchaser of foreign-made products in the United States of America. And my point here is, can you imagine how many jobs and how many small businesses and medium-sized businesses could grow and be successful if Walmart restored the policy, feature no less than 50% of everything in the stores outside of food, which is mainly American-made, that is made in America. Could you imagine it?
Well, you know, yesterday in Manchester, I read an article in their newspaper. I love their newspaper up here. I've read it every morning. But there was an article about Manchester City Council passing a zoning ordinance that allowed a and I'm not going to mention either company, but one grocery store chain to come in and take over from another grocery store chain who built the location but never opened it. And the article went on and on and on. And one of the taglines at the end of the article said, upon opening, the new grocery store company, which is going to open this property for the first time, will employ 300 people. And I thought, that's a grocery store. You employ like 20.
Right.
300 people. That's a rather large grocery store, but even still, that's the kind of music that a zoning to a zoning board's ears that ought to have them sitting up going unanimously passing that law, not worrying about how much commercial's on one side or what the fascia of the building looks like. And, you know, that they all have to get their, like, nickels worth in to prove that they're worthy of being elected onto the zoning board, when really the down and dirty answer is you're going to employ 300 people in the city of Manchester. Let's approve this right away.
Exactly.
Livelihoods.
And Mark, you say the same thing. These are livelihoods that the American people need, and the American leaders simply don't understand, because as Rich Loges said 1,001 times, that they hit the lottery, they go into the office, and they just close the door. They forget about who they were hired to represent, elected, I mean hired. They won the lottery from the people who went out and voted. That's the bottom line. I am a caller. As anybody knows, I will call. I am a persistent dialer. If there was anything I was taught well to do, and that is dial the phone, I will call and call until I get some reasonable response. And that's what I ask listeners, and I tell listeners everywhere I go, did you make a call to complain about it? Some will say, no, I'm only one voice. No, one voice matters, because one voice becomes two voices, three voices, four voices, and it mounts into a mountain. What was a grain of sand is then the, you know, huge mountain of complaints.
And you know, Michael, that I'm only one voice. It doesn't make any difference. To me, is an example of one of the gravest diseases that this country suffers from right now. And it's a disease that we've not, I don't think, heretofore talked about. And that is the disease of willful blindness. This country suffers from such an overwhelming bout of this disease, all the way down to the highest and lowest level of individuals. And willful blindness is a legal term. It's used to describe a situation in which a person seeks to avoid a civil or criminal liability for a wrongful act by intentionally putting him or herself into a position where he or she is unaware of the facts that have been rendered or that would render her liable. So it's putting your head in the sand is essentially what it is. You know, in a number of cases, people transporting packages with illegal drugs in them will say to the Border Patrol, I had no idea there were drugs in that package. Well, guess what? They're going to get convicted, because if you're carrying the package, you're responsible for knowing what's in it. So for somebody to say to me, I don't vote because I'm only one individual, that's willful blindness on one end of the spectrum, whereas willful blindness on the other end of the spectrum were all of the Wall Street bankers that wrote mortgage paper all over the country when they knew the paper was bad.
They knew
it was bad, but they turned their back on it and pretended like this is really perfectly good paper, but it wasn't good at all. That willful blindness starts there, and it goes all the way down to the individual voter who says, my vote doesn't count. They're willfully being blind of the facts. They're willfully being blind of their responsibility to vote, because if every individual who said that turned around and decided to vote, it would change the income, but more importantly, it would invest the citizens of this country in what needs to happen in order to make this a better, stronger, and better place to live.
And Larkin, you're absolutely right. And that's exactly what we've been talking about endlessly for the last few years together as a panel. How can you all of a sudden go from 90% of what's available in your local store, in your grocery store, your Walmart or your Kmart and all these other Targets, how can those products go? And at one time, Larkin, I don't know, you may know better than me, wasn't it a fact that 90% of what was sold in Walmart was American made?
I'm not sure of that, but I know that Walmart didn't ride the tide that was the ceasing of manufacturing in this country and outsourcing it all to China. They were the tide.
Right, right.
Had Walmart and Costco and all of the big boxers turn around and said, no, this isn't a right to outsource all of our clothing to India. They closed every mill. If I wanted to manufacture shirts tomorrow morning, I couldn't do it because there are no mills making the cloth that I would have to use to make that shirt.
Right.
So they turned around. It wasn't the shirt makers that they killed because Botany 500 went to China and started sourcing it over there themselves. It was the mills, the hundreds and hundreds of mills in North and South Carolina that made this cloth that was used in everything from suits to shirts. When you close them down, bringing back clothing without an Indonesian or a Vietnam or an Indian or a China label in it is really tough to do because you can't find the cloth anywhere that's made in this country.
Yeah, Larkin, there's actually two vertical mills, only two left in the United States, and we hooked up with one of them last year, and like you said, they make the thread right to the cloth, to the fabric.
That's very rare,
but in its day, like you said, there was hundreds, but it's a shame there is two. They are doing better and better, but there's only two places you can actually go now, which is sad to see in the United States, and we got to grow these mills back. I remember when the tsunami hit Japan. Do you remember GM had a shortage, couldn't produce their cars because all the electronics came from Japan? And
that
shows you how you can't get reliant on one country overseas. You got to stay self-sufficient here. And like you talk about the supply chain, the auto industry is a good example. We couldn't build one complete car here. So that's something we got to always build a percentage here.
Absolutely. And, you know, Larkin, as we were talking, is that people saw this happening but said nothing. But mainly leadership said nothing, businesses said nothing, and also local community groups could have had the opportunity to say, hey, this is moving out of our neighborhood. As businesses move out, then the tax burden for the schools and all goes on the local property owners. So they should have spoken up a long time ago, but they were blinded. They thought, well, maybe this service-oriented economy is really going to take off. We'll just have to wait 6 months or a year, and 6 months or a year turned into 6 years and so forth and so on.
Yeah,
so,
but saying that a supply or a service-oriented economy was going to support this country is ridiculous.
Absolutely.
We're the number one consuming economy in the world. You add two and three together and they don't equal what we consume. We're a consumer economy, not a service economy. And you can't do that. I mean, you can't decide that you're going to take all of those good, great blue-collar and half-blue and white-collar jobs and turn them into service jobs. That's service what?
Service what? That's the question.
Listen, the problem was that when this tsunami hit, this economic tsunami hit, it was making more money for the major corporations, and it was allowing the consumer to spend less money to buy that, you know, mattress or that blue jean shirt that they wanted so badly, that normally they'd pay $28 for or $42 for a really good denim shirt, button-down shirt. Now you go to Walmart, you buy the shirt for $8.95. Were the consumers yelling real loud? No, they were wearing $8.99 denim shirts and pocketing the rest of that money.
You're right.
Good and bad times economically. So there's so many elements to turning this around. But building an infrastructure is the foundation. You don't have the infrastructure, you do everything else right, then it's just not going to work.
And that chain of supply has got to continue to grow. And, you know, when you, as you say that, it brings me to the point of what I've been hearing from the store owners and also from the managers of the bigger places. They're saying that people are coming in, they're looking at the products, no matter how cheap they are. If they find that there's no supply of American made, they're saying, well, I already have three pairs of jeans, I'll wear them out and I'll wait. Maybe this tide of change is really going to continue to happen, and I'll wait till the fall or winter to buy myself this product or that product. And that's very good in one respect. It may be hurting some businesses at their cash register, but it may also be telling businesses that if you don't invest in more American made and you don't encourage more American made, your cash register is going to continue to be empty. Do you agree with that, Mark?
Yeah. You know, Mike, you just said a big word, invest. You know, when you buy a Made in America product, we're all talking today about investing in your own country. You have to keep one eye on your country and invest in your country. A Made in America purchase is an investment. Every time you buy a Made in America product, it raises a flag for somebody to say, boy, I need more. Hopefully, again, these manufacturers we're using, we support 450 supplier manufacturers. They have to add people and equipment and create more jobs. And, you know, people have got to understand that relationship. Yeah, I just believe, you know, keep investing. One team, one goal. I wanted to ask you guys' opinion. You know, Larkin, you're in New Hampshire, presidential election. You mentioned a candidate's coming. Now, Donald Trump, people up and down with, and he announces that he's running. One thing he said many, many times is, I'm all about jobs, jobs, and jobs. What's your take on this, you know, Rich, Larkin?
Well, I'm going to step in front of Rich because I have strong feelings about Donald Trump. There's good and bad. You know, he had a stream of consciousness speech that he put on yesterday. No notes, all of it off the cuff. And it in those instances, if you're not real careful, stream of consciousness can get pretty garbled. But if you really sat there and took notes about what Donald Trump said, we hit so many targets right in the center. It's not even funny. We outsourced everything to China and Japan, he said, and then we turn around and borrow hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars from them, which is giving them back our money, and we borrow it back from them. It's absolute insanity. He certainly understands the issue. The only problem I have is that the Donald stands a chance, unfortunately, of turning this presidential cycle into a reality show. And that's not going to be good for either party or for the process, as far as I can tell. Rich?
Well, a couple things, guys. So I had the distinct, I guess, however you might view it, distinct pleasure or not of having, I've interviewed Donald Trump several times when I was a journalist. And it was always, of course, regarding some multi-gazillion dollar golf course that he was looking to build somewhere. To answer, broadly, Mark, your question, there are numerous things that he has said over the years that have made a great deal of sense. And I have to really echo, Larkin, your sentiment, because that was pretty much exactly the first thing that I thought after I heard some of his speech. A lot of his points he's been saying publicly for a long time anyway. But the first thing that I thought after the speech was, politicians have more and more already moved toward celebrity and the process and the constant streaming of information 25 hours a day, 8 days a week. For better or for worse, Donald Trump is going to exacerbate that and make it more of just a reality TV / mockery of what this process is all supposed to be about. So, does he have a right to run? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
If he does what's required to get on the ballots, and he's not in the debates, that's because of Michael, you mentioned before about there being so many candidates not getting into the debates. Well, that's a media standard, right? And media is a private entity using public airwaves, and they'll decide, well, there are too many candidates. I mean, I've never heard anyone say there are too many fast food hamburgers, right? And we just keep releasing more and more fast food hamburgers. I've never heard that there are too many cell phones. So why keep releasing cell phones? I could make this a really crude joke about going to a Walgreens or CVS and checking out certain things that you might take to help with indigestion. I'm not going to do that either. No one's ever said don't. Well, we have too many. Now the argument, Larkin, about whether all of these options, how different all of them may be. Well, that's a different discussion, right? If you look at the overall Republican field right now. While I'm not saying I'd cast a vote for him, because I've got my own opinions on how I think a guy like Bernie Sanders might be a lot more influential in this election if voters, and particularly Democrats, want him to be. But I look at a guy like Rand Paul, though I'm not really sold on him. I would much rather Rand Paul than Jeb Bush. And on the Democratic side, I mean, you know, ABC, anybody but Clinton, right? So, and just because, Larkin, you're there, I have to make mention of something. I saw an interview that was on last week with Bernie Sanders, and he said something very interesting. And I want to make sure I get the wording right, so I'm going to check myself on this. But what he was talking about in terms of our economy and who influences our elections, he was talking about the billionaires, right? The gazillionaires, as I call them, the 1%. And he said maybe the billionaires have won. And that's an interesting thing to say, because what I think a statement like that can do is it can actually take some of the obsession off the gazillionaires, because gazillionaires are going to do well no matter what economy. 6 years ago, China had zero billionaires. In a kind of weird communist, somewhat kind of sort of free market economy. And now today they have over 30, and that's in just the course of half a decade. Gazillionaires are going to do fine no matter what. So Bernie saying that kind of thing actually shuffles the deck a little bit to say, what about middle class? What about those who are considered poor, might be on the cusp of the middle class? And you know what, guys? For the first time in a while, all of my Democrat friends who for years kept with the fear-mongering that you got to vote for a Democrat, otherwise a Republican gets in, and all my Democrat friends who will say how the Democrats are about single-payer health care and getting out of the Middle East and making elections publicly financed, the Democrats have their chance right now with Bernie Sanders. Now, agree or disagree with the guy. Michael, you talked about what do we want out of our politicians. Let's start. How about this? The best place to start is trust. One thing about Sanders, I got a hard time not trusting the guy, because what he's saying, he's been saying for years. This isn't Hillary Clinton, you know, farting the wind. One day it's blowing east, one day it's blowing west. Not with him. Not with him. So I think that right now the Democrats, you talk about want a guy. They had a chance to vote Nader. They didn't do it in 2000. Of course, they had Kerry, no different from W. Bush. And then they had, right, of course, President Obama twice. Well, they got a guy right now that is pretty much in line with what the Democrats claim to be about. Would I rather Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton? 24/7. And I don't, by the way, guys, I'm not on his campaign. I'm not paid to, I've never given a contribution ever to a politician, unless you count the 10 bucks that I donated to a Ralph Nader talk back in 2008 that he had to disclose as a campaign contribution. I'm done with my rant on this one. We could go to break.
That's a great rant, but and a lot of what Bernie Sanders says is a great dose of reality as far as the issues are concerned. That's great, but when the solution is socialism, I'm out of here. I'm done. I don't even want to hear from the guy. And he's an avowed socialist. I don't do that.
When I come back, I'm
going to... That's not in my DNA.
When we come back from a few acknowledgments of some of the very good, faithful people that help us to maintain our broadcast, not only on this Wednesday show, but 7 days a week here on 860 AM, I want to ask all of you if we, the people, had the idea of having somebody we choose for president. Is there any particular person, Larkin, Mark, and Rich, you would like to see put up for the president of the USA? Let me have a moment to just acknowledge some of our very faithful sponsors. We do all provide them their full advertisements during our daily broadcasts, and I often speak to them about the importance of our Wednesday show to bring people together and support American Made. And each one of these sponsors contributes greatly to our broadcast, and I'd like to thank Leon Mankowski, attorney at law, and he's at 2624 East Allegheny Avenue. Mr. Chester Shanowski, who is the owner of Serena's Auto Body Shop, and they have two locations in Philadelphia. Give them a call at 215-535-6606. And the people at Net Cost Market at 117,001 Busselton Avenue in Northeast Philadelphia, and they have a new location off Welsh and the Boulevard in Northeast Philadelphia. And Mr. Joseph Drobot, another great supporter of American Made, who is the president of the PRCUA, thanks all of you for going out and speaking up where you shop. And Michael Steinman, attorney at law, has an office in Center City and also in Northeast Philadelphia. For any of your legal needs, give him a call at 215-564-1866. And Dr. Eva Marchak also has two offices in Philadelphia. For a great smile, give her a call at 215-739-2787. And when you're in the Port Richmond area, stop by Polka Deli. They're at 2719 East Allegheny Avenue. They have a great selection of products, all for your specialty dinners and picnics and everything else. Stop by Polka Deli. Give them a call at 215-634-3750. And if you're doing some traveling and you want quality service, call the Polish American Travel Service at 2714 East Allegheny Avenue. And when you're in the stores, check out Giorgio Foods, which have been a symbol of quality since 1928. And Mr. Martin Bednarek, a very faithful supporter of our daily broadcasting here on 860. He is the president of Washington Savings Bank, and they have five locations in Philadelphia. Whenever you stop by a Washington Savings Kazimierz Wielki Bank, make sure you let them know that you hear about them right here on 860 and the American Made program. And also Yolanda Konopacka de Scipio, attorney at law, thanks all of her clients in Pennsylvania and New Jersey for supporting the American Made movement. You can give Yolanda a call at 215-423-4824. And if you would like information or actually like to buy some great insurance from State Farm, you can call Karen Janad at 215-862-5490. And also Dr. Virginia Zinn and everyone from Everest Dental, located at 9892 Busselton Avenue in Northeast Philadelphia. Thank you for supporting American Made, and also invite you to call them for all of your dental needs. Give Everest Dental a call at 215-671-0188. And best wishes to all from Mr. Frank Spula, National President of the Polish National Alliance. And when you are in Philadelphia, I encourage you to stop by and enjoy some gambling and some friendship, great food at the Sugar House Casino. They're located at 1001 North Delaware Avenue in Philadelphia. You can check them out anytime by going to sugarhousecasino.com. And also, I want to remind you that the Made in America store is a leading force in the American Made movement. Mark Andel, a member of our weekly panel here on American Workers Radio, is a very sincere guy. Check him out on the internet by going to madeinamericastore.com and spread the word to all of your family members and friends. Well, guys and listeners, thank you for all that you did these last few years to promote American Made. As I said earlier, the major press would like to see all of us go away because we're not major advertisers. Major advertisers, just like major donors, really make the clock tick. As I went around during this past weekend, I saw a number, an enormous number of American-made flags on homes and also in on telepoles. A lot of the community groups are now asking that they invest in American flags and they put them outside all along the streets. And that's something very important to see because the flag is the symbol of unity for the American people. It reminds the American people that listen to us and hear other outlets like David Muir and so many others that are promoting the American Made movement that we are united and the wave of change is taking place in America.
Michael, let me ask you something. Did you just say telepole?
Yes.
Well, I haven't heard that point.
Yeah, that's a goodie. The telephone poles. We used to call them telepoles. They still
do. Yeah, yeah. In Pittsburgh, we did the same thing, but I've never heard it outside of Pittsburgh. I don't think.
I have a tele here, American Made by Fender, and it sounds amazing. Larkin, just one point because I don't want to make this entire show about presidential candidates. We got a year and a half to talk about all these men and women. But I do want to mention, guys, one thing that I did. I contacted Bernie Sanders' campaign. I haven't heard back from them. And I gave some advice. Now, Larkin, I understand why you just said what you said.
Well, of course
about,
you do.
About socialism, because that's how Sanders describes himself. I think Sanders speaks very well about a lot of issues, but I think he's making a huge, huge mistake in one of the things that he's the way he's presenting. He uses the term, the adjective, and he uses it with a great deal of frequency, the term free. And I contacted his campaign. I have not heard back. And what I said, that all these issues about our economy, taxation, health care, these are very, Middle East, these are very, very important issues. Much more so than what man just became a woman. Much more so. I said, however, the problem when you're trying to talk about these issues and always inserting the word free. There is no such thing as free. There's no such thing. So that part of the presentation, which, let's be honest, Sanders has been doing it that way for a really long time. It needs to be honed and polished to really explain why these things with investment. See, when we're talking investment ain't free. But if we're talking investment, healthcare, infrastructure, all these things, we also have to say there's no such thing as free. But here's why it's worth spending the money. And then my final line to the Sanders campaign was, not even this advice is free because I needed to use electricity and the internet, which I got to pay for. But there ain't no such thing as free. And I think that Congressman Sanders needs to cease immediately saying that because what it does is it for better or worse, fair or unfair, it scares off many who really would – should be listening, but won't because of the way that things are described. He also makes another error about constant comparisons with other countries. And that's a catch-22 argument. That's a catch-22 argument. Nowhere in the world, anywhere, is like America. Again, for better or for worse, we have a unique set of issues here, guys. So we need an innovative and unique approach. And if that approach doesn't work, but it was the best approach we believe at that time, and we don't feel that the people we vote to enact that change or are making the change, you vote them out. You vote them out. So I don't want to make it all about Congressman Sanders, Larkin, but I want to say, I understand why you said what you said.
So
I do.
It makes me make a notation of a commercial I saw this morning on television for the very, very first time, and I took notice. I mean, it stopped me cold in my tracks. There was a young kid that's 7 years old with his hand across his heart and his father with his baseball cap in his hand across his heart. and they were singing the Star Spangled Banner, and the camera panned around from behind, and you could tell that they were standing at a baseball game. And they just played that for like 20 seconds, maybe 25 seconds. And the last 5 seconds, they broke away to a gold star in a black background. And they said, "This display of freedom was brought to you by the United States Army." That was about the most powerful commercial I have seen in ages and ages. It really made me stand up and take a look. And again, Rich, I know what you're saying. He says education should be free. He says that health care should be free, that, you know, most of the common human services, social services in this country should be free on the government, and that we need to tax everybody, especially the rich. He is one of the great socialistic redistribution of wealth guys, thereby taking all of the incentives to be successful in this country. I just don't like the solution. I'm sorry. I think a lot of his ideas are unique and fun to listen to and great fodder and very, very powerful debate. I don't like a single one of his solutions, not a one.
Mm. Well, I think that the people are beginning to show that they want more out of a candidate just than a lot of this rigmarole. Those announcement campaigns and all, with all the people cheering in the background and all this and that, and making these statements, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, that's all wonderful. But for the last few years, all of us together, you've been noticing one thing about things that I ask. Tell me more about your solution. Don't tell me a statement. We're going to promote jobs. Tell me what type of jobs we're going to promote. Give me some ideas. Yes, Mark.
Yeah, Larkin, a couple shows back, you mentioned a big point, leadership. We lack leadership in the country. Leadership, leadership, leadership. And I want to add to that, you're absolutely right, but we need the right leadership by the right person. It can't be selfish leadership. You know, a lot of people blame leaders for everything. It's like blaming God for everything. They blame a leader for everything. We want more of the President Lincoln leadership, level five leadership. What's your take on that? We need the right leadership. And you hit a big point. And, you know, when we're talking about candidates, we got to talk about leadership, right?
That's a great way of putting it, too. I've never heard that, but that's a super way of putting it, level five. We need a level five leader right now.
Absolutely.
We really need a five-star leader. And you're not going to get answers to questions, folks. I'm telling you that right now. Michael, you can talk until you're blue in the face. These candidates will not answer questions, because if they do, they have they face the opportunity of alienating the voters out there that they're trying to get.
But then they fail the interview.
They're going to give non-answers as long as they can get away with it, and they will to the bitter end of this debate. And then when they go to govern, the first 4 years, they won't do a lot because they want the second four. The second four, wild stuff starts to happen. Really, really great, crazy, wild stuff, like a state dinner at the White House for Al Sharpton. A state dinner for Al Sharpton? Really? I can give them a list the size of the New York phone book of people in this country who deserve a state dinner a heck of a lot more than Al Sharpton.
You better believe it.
We're at the point now in the political cycle, certainly in this current presidency, that he and the First Lady are going to be out there making their statements, and that's fine. They've been elected by the people, and they have every right in the world to do that. We have every right in the world to criticize them, and I don't criticize them for that. I don't deny them the opportunity to go out there and say what they think needs to be said. But to think that we're going to get candidates currently running for that office to step up to the plate and say, okay, see, here's the problem. I'm all for jobs. Well, you know, thanks, Donald. I appreciate where you're all for jobs. But how? What are you going to do? You're going to, across the board, tax? You're going to take all of the entitlement money and pour it into the infrastructure and hire people to do shovel-ready jobs? I mean, how?
Wouldn't it
don't
be nice
tell me
to
I'm
run
off
commercials?
It's like it's as bad as us, Michael. We're just as guilty as they are. We're for jobs, and we keep on talking jobs. And let's talk to these candidates about jobs. No. We're smart enough that we ought to be able to say, here's the kind of jobs that we want. Here's what we think they ought to do. Here's American Workers Radio's top five hit things that need to be done in order to restore this economy. But we talk in generalities. Well, we're for jobs. We need jobs, and we need to get these politicians to talk about jobs. Well, they talk about jobs. They do it all day long. The Donald talked about it yesterday in a stream of consciousness conversation that lasted 15 minutes about jobs and the criticism of Asia and all of the stuff that comes over here as well as most of the banking that we do as a government. But he didn't come up with a single solution, not one.
Michael, so, you ask about who we want to see run and do you know how – guys, I don't know. I don't know the number, but I know this, and I don't care what anyone says. I know this is right. There are so many people, so many right now in the U.S. who would have an innovative approach to all these things, whatever that might be. You know why we're probably, at least in this election, why we're never going to hear about pretty much all these people? Because they won't run, Michael. Who the hell is going to run in this? I mean, who's going to, good ideas are, so what? You need billions to run at the presidency. You need, Michael, you need tens of millions to win on the state level. The freaking state level. You need tens of millions of dollars. So you can't run in these elections just on ideas, because that's not what American politics is about. American politics is about never-ending information about celebrity, about the major groups that politicians talk about, like working families and seniors and immigrants and gays. You know, people, you know, gay, lesbian, all these things. And the problem is politicians are not forced into representation of all people, because whether someone is a member of one group, one demographic, one of one, or one of 10 million, everybody is supposed to be represented equally. And that, what I just said, Michael, right there, is the destruction of the so-called progressive argument of many in this country who will say, well, Rich, but that's who votes. Incorrect. I vote. Many others like me. Look, I joke around all the time, guys. I'm a Caucasian small business owner born in America who likes women with no kids. I am the most useless voter walking. Useless. Capital U. Difference is, and there are many whom I know like me, difference is, Larkin, to go back to an early point of yours, they don't do anything about it because they take it personal. Because they want to be self-victimized. Oh, it doesn't matter. Everybody watches hours and hours and hours of TV. That doesn't matter either. But we do it. So the bottom line is, with these guys and women, Michael, we ask, who would we like to see run? Who would we want to vote for? Most in this current structure, this duopoly, which has created electoral and financial barriers to even getting on ballots, much less running. Who the hell's going to do that?
Well, Rich,
right, who's going to do that?
To draft someone is going to be very difficult unless they have it in their blood to give it a try. It's going to be difficult. These that are running like publicity. They like to go around. They're doing their things. Unfortunately, people want, and I think they really need, candidates for president who are going to focus on one thing only: America first. And America's economy first, the American people first, our infrastructure first, our schools first, our job skills first. Not one candidate that has announced in the last few weeks has focused on just a few things I mentioned. Nobody. It's all little statements. Where's a written policy? I like to look at a brief policy. One side of a paper telling me what you're going to do. We need to do this. We need to change. We've discussed on this broadcast how we need to change our school system to include more of the trades and in vocational arts.
You're talking about a plan. You want a plan.
Where is the plan? Where's the map?
Where's the plan? They do it for hockey. They do it for football. We need a plan. We're in the number one country in the world, America. It's the only America we have. We're trying to elect the number one guy, most qualified, best leader there is. And I don't know if people realize how important that is and you know, this next election is.
Yeah, you're right. And right now, we say this to the listeners and our supporters, that what the candidates are just getting up there doing their thing. It's like getting in a car and just driving one place for a block and then go three blocks later, I'll go left, and four blocks after that, I'll go right. There is no plan. You don't know where you'd like to end up. They haven't said in my first 4 years as the president, I will accomplish this.
They should be required to have a plan.
Where is that written plan? That's what we have to start haunting. Where's the plan?
Wouldn't that be fun, Mark?
Wouldn't it?
Yeah. Wouldn't that be fun? You have to submit a written game plan before you can declare for president.
Right? It should be a prerequisite.
Now, you know, Mark sent me something about a week ago, and I think in a future broadcast, we're going to focus on that particular email that he sent me from Warren Buffett. That was very good, and I think we need to do a whole show on that particular subject. Because
he nails it.
He nails it down, and I want to give the exact figures that he quoted in there because they are fact, and I want to we'll use it for an entire broadcast. Maybe sometime in July we can do that. But what we're saying today and what people really want to hear is, who is the person, if we had to go to the polls tomorrow and vote, which of the people that are there so far have motivated any of us?
My vote wouldn't count, so I'm not going.
Yeah,
no,
that's
Freeman, what's your plan? We could start this.
Can we, hey guys, can we continue this next week, this show? We're gonna try to listen again, and we're gonna do this because I think we're making more of an impact and talking more sense than most of the people who have announced that they're running for president of the United States. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as you can see by the clock on the wall, I can't believe an entire hour has run away from us. I want to thank Rich Logis, Larkin Connolly, and Mark Andel for their participation today. I'm depending on all of you to email today's broadcast to your family members and friends so we even get more people involved in the Buy American Made campaign. You'll be able to listen to a rebroadcast of today's show on the internet in about an hour simply by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com until this Saturday at 11 or next Saturday or this coming Wednesday at 11. I wish you the very best. Thank you, gentlemen, for your participation.
Thanks, everyone.
Live free, guys.